latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm going to Chicago. That's the last place my baby stays.
We're back at the races, about 15 into hour two. Thank Jay for the extensive coverage, and turn to Ed DeRosa. Joins us courtesy of Twin Spires, where players win. Good morning.
Good morning, live from Churchill Downs.
Appropriately, and I'm sure I brought this up last year and maybe the year before. And actually, maybe the year before that, Ed, the annual picture that you put up of your first day working in the industry, which always makes me laugh with the mascot. That was great.
I love mascots. My first graded stake was actually the gardenia. And, you know, back in 2002 with cell phones getting prominent, but certainly no smartphones. Not a lot of photographic evidence of that, unfortunately, but thankfully someone was on hand at Hoosier a few months later to snap that pic. So, but yeah, yesterday was 17 years of the day. I loaded the Toyota Camry and headed south down 75, and pleasure to be involved ever since.
Well, the varied experiences, and you could weigh that. In fact, this might be. It might help people, because I hear all the time, and I'm sure you do as well, from young people that, and not even, they don't have to be young. They can come from different walks of life, about their interest in the sport from a, you know, from a coverage standpoint. And with so many avenues too, Ed, compared to what was available, you know, when you and I were younger, you're younger than me, but you know, the internet and this era, you know, you mentioned the cell phones and you know, 17 years ago, there's really been a landmark shift in how somebody can get involved on the, whether it's the publicity side, you know, the turf publicist side, or the, you know, the writing and you know, television and so forth. You know, there's so many more options open. And talk about how you got interested and what you did to even, you know, get to the Thoroughbred Times originally.
Yeah, you know, I would definitely say it helped. I was an early adopter to the internet. Now, obviously, that's not as much in play now, but I would say the lesson that still holds is avail yourself to the different ways of communicating, not only to those who might be able to offer you a job or mentor you, but also just, you know, eventually the consumers of whatever you're hoping to do, whether that's, you know, work your way up to be a trainer, a bloodstock agent, someone who writes about the sport. You definitely want to know how your customers eventually are going to be turned on to what you have to offer. And back then for me, it was definitely, for better or worse, admittedly, it's always been, you know, some self-control things with what to put out online and things like that. But so definitely would tell people to be aware of that. And the other thing for sure I would say is don't be shy with asking for advice, help, mentorship. I vividly remember the first time I met Steve Crisp. He came to Thistledown during one of his book tours. And, you know, I went up to him and asked him, and just, you know, getting your name in front of people and feeling comfortable talking to, you know, management or executives, or, you know, in the case with me and Steve, someone you really looked up to, who I grew up reading when my grandfather would bring the form home. That was, you know, a watershed moment that, hey, this guy's mortal. He's in front of me. We're talking. We're race fans. And it really helps, you know, build confidence to develop those type of relationships. And, you know, I would say, you know, a couple years later when I graduated, allowed me to have the confidence to apply for Thoroughbred Times. So for anyone listening, or if you're listening, your kids are interested in getting in the game, or other people, you know, definitely would say take advantage of how open the industry is to helping others, and, you know, the mentorship, because that's been essential in my career and definitely something always on the forefront of my mind to pay forward.
Well, a good, you know, good advice, and you know, there's really countless examples of the people that are involved that the era has produced. David Aragona, a good example, who was, you know, offering up opinions and in a, you know, in a polished and you know, very polite and uniform way, you know, earned his way really into circulation. Listen, I my Derby Trail endeavor, which started out as a Yahoo group. I mean, I tell people all the time. Oh, how'd you? You know, people ask, how'd you get involved? He said you couldn't make up what, you know, what transpired. I was just looking for an outlet for handicapping and you know, my idle thoughts about racing, because I was, you know, spending a lot of time at racetracks with the barbecue. And, you know, next thing I know, I get that call from, you know, from Joe Gracie and John Parada, you know, that Gus Alonso recommended me, because Gus was a member of Derby Trail. There were 50 people. I had 50 members of Derby Trail. 50.
That is incredible. I mean, I knew the general background, but not to that. Someone should do a story.
I think there's been enough stories. Thank you.
You and David are great examples. And, you know, I work with Scott Shapiro, and he had his website.
That's a good. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. You know, good opinions are obviously important, but coming about it honestly, as you mentioned with David, you know, earnest preparation and, you know, appreciation for the hard work that everyone puts into this industry. And, you know, it paid off for them, and would encourage anyone not to, you know, I know it's in this industry especially, You know, nepotism comes up a lot and things like that. And I've worked with people in other endeavors enough to know that that's not unique to racing. And no one should be discouraged by what they perceive as unfair advantages, because I hate to punt and say that's everywhere, but the reality is it is. But at the same time, there's just too many examples of people who have put in the work and made the connections and have gotten the opportunity to ply their trade in this wonderful game. And it's just, it's not worth giving up on for anyone who's truly interested in making it a career, whether that's, you know, career passion or a career paycheck or both in my case. But it really is a wonderful industry. And as I said at the start, privileged to be a part of it for so many years now.
Oh, well, and giving people horses like Honey Bunny, that helps.
Yeah, which I'm glad a lot of people were on her based on what she ultimately went off at. But, yeah, it was a while before I felt like I went off the beaten path a little bit and got one home on the show, Steve. So glad she got it done for me, and hopefully keep it going this week.
Well, and let's hit any highlights. And one thing I suppose we should do in advance of Belmont, with all the work that is going to be involved, and since we won't talk until either Thursday or Friday when we do the handicapping, give us some insights, because there'll be a ton of reports and you know, help.
Yeah, the web address at BristNets, BristNet.com/Belmont. But two promos we're excited about. Talk a little bit more next week, but real quick, we're going to do some bonus cash drops throughout the day on Belmont. All you need to do is be logged in. So hopefully if you have a Twins Fires account, make sure it's active on Saturday, and you may be the winner of one of many $1,000 bonuses. And then we're also doing a fun promo where you share kind of a spendthrift angle, share the upside. But me, Scully, and Shapiro are going to be placing some public wagers, and if they hit and you opt into the promo, you split the winnings. So hopefully Scott, me, and James can come through for our players. So it's kind of like a player's pool without actually having to put any money in. So we're excited about that, and what a great card to look forward to diving in, hopefully for some big scores for our players.
I suppose we'll see some pedigree notes, too, from...
Yep. Yeah, David Miller will have his pedigree report. Of course, Kelly Riley, kind of two-pronged attack. She does some pedigree insight as well. But based on what sort of international runners may show up for the Gold Cup and races of that ilk, she will certainly be all over the international scouting report, as she calls it. And speaking of international racing, would be remiss if we didn't mention Vance Hansen's analysis of the Epsom Derby is on Twin Spires, and of course you can watch and wager on that with us. And Vance very into the European classics, and I know he's excited to write this one up.
Well, and since this came up, we can mention, and we were hoping to have played the coronation just before, and the Oaks at 11:30. We don't have the equipment normally that we do in the studio. Usually Kay's got his laptop to pipe the race through, and Deja's working the board today, and she does not have that option. So we can't bring you the two grade ones today from Epsom. However, I can tell you that you had a significant upset in the coronation with Defoe at about 10-1 beating Kew Gardens. Roger Varian for one of the mock tombs. This one, this is, which shake is this? This is Shake Your Booty. No, that's one of the great, I can't help myself.
I have plenty of those. Know exactly what part of the heart that came from.
This is Sheikh Mohammed Obaid Al Maktoum.
Oh, so, okay.
One of the, this is probably one of the sons or nephew, and who knows? But 10-1 with Atenzi aboard. And, in fact, I'm just seeing where Marcus Hirsch said Atenzi turned in a brilliant ride to get the money in the Coronation Cup. So the first group won, and in about another, exactly an hour, actually, we'll come back the fifth race with the Epsom Oaks. So they're well underway here at Epsom. I guess we can turn to, you know, some handicapping on your end.
Yeah,
Ed, what do you got?
We have some good turf racing tomorrow here in the States with all the preps for the Belmont Derby and Secretariat and such. But I took a look at the Oaks Mile Double at Penn National tomorrow. The Penn Oaks, of course, with Chad Brown sending Regal Glory, certainly looks to go through her. But I'm really intrigued, Steve, that Leparoux shows up for Alisale. I guess that's pronounced Kira McLaughlin. The horse does have one race that I think could match Regal Glory. Regal Glory, when Chad sends in a three-year-old filly like that, I just have to think is going to be super odds on. So that could help our price on the Kieran charge. And Leparoux is in the Penn Mile, but just looking, you know, who he's on there versus the Oaks, I definitely think the Oaks is a target. So I thought that was interesting, and he's riding really well. He won 8 Sunday, Monday at Churchill. So I'd give a look to a mild upset if Alisale was 4-1 or higher in the Penn Oaks.
Nice. Okay.
And then the Penn Mile, which caps off an all-turf stakes, pick 4, 15% takeout, Penn National. So good sequence to dive into among Churchill and Belmont and all the other tracks running tomorrow. I'm eager to see how they bet Fluminense. I can't imagine we're going to get 10-1, but really fast last race, 6 furlongs on the dirt, but 5 more than ready, so a mile on the turf seems in this one's scope. And, Steve, I go back to this horse's two-year-old year where Steve Asmussen shipped this horse up to Woodbine to run in a turf stakes. There's plenty of opportunity here. We know Steve can work a condition book the country over. I just think that shows this is a turf horse. Got the tightener, got the prep, fast horse. Probably a race he didn't have to win, but he blitzed him, now shows up here. I'd be shocked. If we got 10-1, I'd actually be kind of worried that the horse was DOB a little bit. Just seems like all systems go for this group. And, I mean, honestly, I'd be happy with half that price, even maybe a little less. There are good horses. Real News right back for Stahl. I thought the Black Album, after that really rough trip, could be a little closer this time and make a run. 40 under at 7-2 just looks like an underlay to me, but could trip out. So there's definitely some horses to go with, but Fluminense, it's even 4-1. I'm a believer. I just think this horse is the fastest of the group, and maybe we'll get the right price, with some questions around the layoff and the poor turf stakes as a two-year-old.
But I thought the same thing.
Probably my bet of the day.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. You got the obvious, and here's a horse that, and you get, we've been getting a lot of these actually, with the return to turf around the eastern half of the country, and you have to be, if not defensive, you have to at least be, well aware that a horse like this is serious in a spot. So I completely agree. And listen, Thread of Blue, if Thread of Blue is going to turn into a horse that rates, he's going to be very, very dangerous as the distances increase, as the summer rolls around. He doesn't have to win. And, I know you just concentrated on these last two 3-year-old stakes, but that's really the theme all day at Penn, because even early on the card, Call Paul is going to be a very short price, and he does not have to win that stake. There's at least three others that look capable in there. I am more and more I was going to just do the late pick four, but I'm the more I looked, the more I wanted to. I wanted to really get involved from the start of that sequence tomorrow at Penn.
Yeah, I agree. No, and with the reduced takeout, all the more reason to give a look. And I think all three of them overlap in some way. So you've already done the work on two sequences if you've managed one. So definitely encourage people to look. The other interesting thing about Fluminense is he doesn't have Santana. And I was really looking to share the upside, but that to me, Steve, was sort of the final piece of the puzzle that Santana stays here. I'm guessing he had the choice if he wanted to ship, especially since with Leperu only riding those turf stakes. I'm kind of wondering if there's a helicopter or some sort of charter heading to Harrisburg from Churchill sometime tomorrow. But Ricardo stays here, and that was just kind of the final, okay, I'm not going to try to beat this horse. Three straight, 100-plus versus net ratings, just looks in too good a form for anyone to jump up in the Aristides. So could be a big day for Steve Asmussen's what I'm forecasting.
Every Saturday since the beginning of the year has been unbelievable. Yeah, he's been killing it.
You know, I hate to bring up the negative and what's been a Hall of Fame career, but obviously he's taken his lumps. And my experience in covering a lot of that when I was with Thoroughbred Times is pretty unwarranted criticism he's faced, I think, at times. I think he's a master. And one of the pleasures of getting to work at the track at Churchill is seeing him with these horses in the paddock. And I'm a fan, is I guess the bottom line. So and at 10-1, I'll really be a fan, but I don't think we're going to get it on Fluminense.
Well, and good for you to say so. And I also, you know, I also should include in this that, you know, Steve, anybody that's listened to the show, going back to Satish's visits and you know, regular appearance, very much knows that, you know, there was a critical point that Steve had to kind of batten down and you know, have a uniform system if he was going to operate as widely as he was operating. And between, you know, obviously his lieutenant in Scott Blasi, who is just you know, tireless and an outstanding horseman in his own right. I've talked about this for years, that, you know, Scott was invited by many to go out on his own at several points, but he loves, you know, the position that he holds there. And then you think about Toby Sheets in New York, who, you know, pretty much operates, he operates that barn now for, my God, it's got to be, it might be 15 years. And, you know, there's just a professionalism that really permeates the operation, you know, down to, you know, the Texas and Louisiana and Oklahoma side. And I completely agree. They do an amazing job, and the results speak for themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. We talked yesterday with Prince of Guillermo running, and he ran third. But, I mean, just looking what Steve's accomplished with New York Central and Tenfold, who, you know, prototypically could have been the type of, you know, classic aspirants, or in the case of Tenfold, who did run the classic horses, who just kind of go backwards and are never heard from again. And, you know, both are stakes winners this year, and it's just that type of work, getting to see firsthand. You really get an appreciation for what goes into training these horses and developing their careers. And it's no wonder that, you know, people like the Winchells and Stud TNT, et cetera, trust Steve.
Oh, Ellen J. Foxwoods and Mr. Fipke sending horses his way. And, you know, the client list you know, what... You know, there's stories that the public isn't even aware of, and of his loyalty to his owners and the Highling Brats specifically, and Steve's piloting them and their operation through a very difficult period, and to come out the other side and to have helped them, you know, stay in the game. And I this is, you know, this is a, there's some things that, you know, the public isn't hearing, and that's frankly, Ed, that's what makes, one of the things that makes the game so, and the industry so complex and so hard for the outside world to comprehend. It's so different, and there's levels of commitment and loyalties that the game engenders and forges that it's not unlike, really, it's unlike almost any walk of life you can think of. It's and it's why you know, if people in the sport appear defensive to some extent, this is the reason why, because it's so personal to everyone, and
right.
I think that's lost in, you know, 140 characters and an environment that you know, that is so simplistic and reduced to sound bites and the spew of bitter and jealous and inept types. It's maddening to me on that front.
Yeah, no, I agree, and it just goes back to, you know, sort of the career advice is take the time to learn, to talk to people. Certainly wish, you know, some politicians and regulators would do the same.
Let's get some more winners, put more money in their people's pockets. There's nothing they enjoy more than that.
Exactly. No, that's what really brings you back, and I took a tough beat yesterday, but you know, it's another day, and anyone in this game knows you got to be, I forget what those things are called, that you punch and they bounce back up, but that just has to be your approach if you're going to succeed in this game. Got to take the licks and keep on ticking.
Exactly. What else you got?
So the Mighty Bow, you know, obviously Bobby's Wicked One. I think interesting that he lands in this spot, and Al Stahl kind of playing the same game as Steve. You know, he has Real News and the Penn Mile and Bobby's Wicked One here on the surface change. But we're finally going to get a price on Morticia. I always think she's over bet. Sometimes
she's not running.
Sometimes not.
Not running.
No. All right.
Not
running.
Not running.
I'm going to punt then to the favorite because I thought she was the only one who could win. Yep, I'm going to punt now, which is too bad because the nearest side is, I like the favorite too. So, you know, I'm going to have to dig a little deeper to see how to try to contract, because I'm not sure either will offer value the win pool. But I really do like share the upside, though, and would probably play him at 3-2 or higher.
Fair enough.
So that's all I got.
All right, that's fine. We're going to talk to Marty, too, about the sequence. It's a very good pick four, pick five. And there are, like I said at the start of the show, reviewing sort of the landscape for the weekend, the more favorites that don't win in that sequence tomorrow at Churchill, the more exponential the payoff is going to be.
Right.
I mean, it's going to rocket. Yeah. Ed, I appreciate it, and we will see you in New York as well.
Absolutely.
With Jay. You're on your way as well.
Yep, I will be there Wednesday, and looking forward to joining you Thursday or Friday. Just let me know.
Excellent. I appreciate it. We're going to stay right here. Deja is going to reach out and bring Nick Tamaro in here. Nick and I will look at a few different things. I will mention that word came earlier this morning from the West Coast and has been confirmed. I waited to mention this, but Roger Stein has passed away. And I know that many of you certainly that are listening to me must have listened to him over the years. A bit of a divisive character, but I did not know him well. or at all, really. So I it makes me wonder why he without knowing me, he seemed compelled to, you know, to take shots. But that was what he did. I will remember one of the good horses that he trained, and he didn't necessarily you know, get the best stock in terms of opportunity, but he won races. And General John B is the one that I think of in terms of Roger Stein's training. And unfortunately got injured and really didn't get a chance after the Santa Anita Derby, you know, to, you know, fully see his career potential, but was a very, I thought was going to be a serious potential player in the Derby. And, you know, that was the fascinating top four finish. You had Wilco, Giacomo, General John B, and Buzzard's Bay. And I just remember, you know, thinking that the race, for whatever reason, people didn't think it was a good running of the Santa Anita Derby. And I had a different view. I thought they came home fast, and it was one of the reasons that, you know, I had interest in Giacomo when it came to the Derby. So Roger Stein gone. It is a little irresistible to not invoke the Hyman Roth line because Roger you know, when word would come that Roger was near death, that word has been coming for at least 20 years. So not to laugh, but everybody that is hearing this is gonna wait for further confirmation, because that was part of his legacy, that he didn't have long, and he stretched that out a long time. Nick Tamaro standing by, and Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. And for the second week, for the second time in 3 weeks, so we had some furniture being moved. Marty McGee had to be reshuffled because he was doing some moving. So I thought of you.
Thing to do this time of year.
I guess so. You know,
Marty picked a better weekend than I did. Of course, I moved the day before the Preakness. Marty picked this dead weekend here. We have pre-Belmont.
Well, there's only a certain percentage that'll understand this reference, but moving day in Canada, in Quebec, and I don't know if this is true in Ontario, but virtually everybody's contract for or rental agreements all start July 1st. And so on like June 27th, 8th, 9th, 30th, the end of June, everybody is moving at the same time. It's the craziest thing you'll ever see. Everywhere you go in town, there's people moving because their rental agreement starts July 1. I don't know how it started or what there is what they call the construction holiday, but it's really strange. And of course July 1st is Canada Day too, so it's a holiday, and then there's the 2 weeks that virtually all construction workers are off, the construction holidays. Things are very organized in Canada.
It's funny that you say that. I learned the hard way during the semester I spent abroad in Rome when we arrived on August, I believe it was the 18th or 19th.
We were
caught in the middle of the dreaded Ferragosto, which is the two-week holiday that everybody in the nation takes. So we were instructed to make sure we didn't break anything, that we didn't cause any trouble, and that we behaved ourselves because nothing was getting fixed until September 1st.
Well, that European style. The construction, they called it the construction holiday, and you learn a thing.
They do things right over there. You know, we work way too hard, and they remind us of that pretty frequently when you're over there for a period of time. But my favorite were the scheduled Friday morning strikes that enabled a little bit better experience Thursday evening, and you'd be told that the people who worked on the buses and trains were striking and that things wouldn't start until noon. So just made for a more enjoyable Thursday evening.
Well, in Montreal, Thursday night is the big night out, and virtually nobody works on Friday, period. And if you do have to work on Friday, you only work till about 12 or 12:30, and then everybody goes for lunch, and they call it terrasse. Everybody's going to go sit on a porch at some brasserie and drink lunch. And if you had work scheduled after 2 o'clock and nobody was there by 2:15, you might as well just pack it in because especially when the weather got nice. I mean, when the winter would finally end in Montreal, as soon as the terrasse season opened, it's such a great place. You can't start drinking, start smoking cigarettes, and you see people you know. Forget it. 3 day, two and a half day weekends, pretty much all spring, summer, early fall. I love it. Well, let's make it a 3 day weekend. Some Friday action maybe, or right into the weekend. What are we looking at?
You had mentioned when we talked about when I was coming on the Penn National races, which actually came up pretty solid. I also, shameless self-promoting plug, I was with Jonathan Kinchin on his NYRA Pick 5 podcast that you can download after you listen to this, of course. And he and I covered the NYRA Bets Pick 5 tomorrow, as well as some other handicapping-related things. Touched a little bit on what's going to occur next week at Belmont. The Penn Mile, this now I think in seventh or eighth running, a race that's actually become pretty productive, and it drew a nice little field this year. Obviously the headliner is A Thread of Blue, and I think, and one of the things that Jonathan and I talked about yesterday was that how well both A Thread of Blue and Social Paranoia ran in the American Turf, where Digital Age ran by everybody late and got the job done. I was somewhat surprised by how well A Thread of Blue ran. I kind of chalked him up to being a Florida Wonder Horse that maybe got better when he moved to Point South, but he definitely duplicated that kind of effort, getting the lead in the American Turf. And this is one of those races where it can be very tricky to just simply judge pace numerically, because you may have been inclined to say, that pace was moderate, it was a 49-1, and both Threat of Blue and Social Paranoia were close the entire way. But using pace figures, it was a faster-than-par pace, given that turf condition. That turf really wasn't firm after the rain that it took on Friday morning and some during the week as well. So I'm looking for a Threat of Blue to be very, very tough. I would say that another real option to me, another horse that you'd want to entertain, will probably be the second choice in 40 Under, who came back off a layoff in his 3-year-old debut in the Woodhaven, ran a good second to Clint Maroon, who got it hit all his own way pace-wise, and Clint Maroon is going to come back in the Pennine Ridge tomorrow and face a couple of really tough Chad Brown horses. The two Todd Pletcher trainees in there, one of which is Social Paranoia, who I referenced before, and I'm sure we'll end up talking about that race. But 40 Under was hardly embarrassed himself in his comeback. There really wasn't much he could do to try and cut into the margin that Clint Maroon had established early, who just absolutely walked on that pace. And 40 Under will get back to a firm turf course, or closer to a firm turf course, after being racing on a yielding strip 3 times in a row. And it's tough, given the way that we label turf courses in this country, to determine what exactly is yielding versus what's good, and so on and so forth. But I think it's safe to say that this colt is run on boggy courses. at least two of the last three times. There's one horse in here that I'm interested in that I wanted to bring up, and I thought his comeback race as a three-year-old was very, very good, and I think his one turf race is not one for which you can really judge him, and that's Fluminense, who is drawn outside. I think there are real excuses for his two poor performances, the first of which came with a little bit of trouble at Woodbine. It looked like he had some difficulty picking up the yielding turf course early in the Soaring Free last year, and once he got some free space, he ran on a little bit. It was not a poor performance by any means, and I think the Breeders' Futurity is a race that you can pretty much just throw out. So now you've got a horse that's drawn favorably, should get a pace-stalking trip in a race where a threat of Blue Figures to be the one on the front end. I don't know how much pressure he's going to get. And maybe Fluminense ends up getting that first over stalking trip and can be a little dangerous in here at a bit of a price. So I think it is going to end up being relatively chalky. I'm going to play a threat of Blue over Fluminense Exacta and use 40 under a little bit in the Exacta as well, and hope that the good form that a threat of Blue is in really holds up.
We talked just earlier, Ed, DeRose and I, and Fluminense absolutely dangerous and made plenty of sense involved in here. I, you know, Real News and Casa Creed are competitive. It's even with Empire of War out, it's an interesting group. And you know, we did talk to, I should mention, it's funny, both you and Ed, we just went through this, and Rudy Brissett was on with me earlier in the week, and he's expecting a better effort from the Black Album. And just the fact that he comes back on not that long a rest, 4 weeks. The Black Album, I'm surprised, isn't getting any consideration here.
Yeah, I think it's tough to know exactly what to make of him. I thought that he ran well in the Transylvania. It felt like a performance that would really position him to move forward. He seems like he's probably a mid-range grade 3 type of turf router right now. And if you believe that this is, and take out a threat of Blue, and this is a mid-range grade 3 type of race, he's probably would end up being one of the choices if the threat of Blue was not in here. And I do think the 15-1 is probably a little bit more than he'll actually be. So I could see anybody backing him with confidence, figuring that they're going to get a decent price. And he's one that really is capable of adjusting to any kind of pace scenario. So if for some reason the threat of Blue is able to kind of coast along early, I think he can still make that late run. So I think you could do a lot worse than in terms of looking for 10-1 shots.
Well, and glancing at, you know, at his two North American races, it's a little deceptive, you know, especially if you don't go back and watch that American turf, because he ran more than credibly, and that included, you know, after the botched beginning. So I think this is a fun race. I mean, like you say, if Threat of Blue is able to, you know, do what he did in the Palm Beach and is, you know, as tactical and versatile as he looked, he's going to be formidable not just tomorrow, but going forward through the summer on the 3-year-old front. What else at Penn National?
I thought the Penn Oaks was really just Regal Glory's race to lose. I don't know how much there is to say about it. I think she'll end up being about 2-5, and seems very unlikely that she'll be defeated. Ionic, I guess, has a little bit of a shot, and I think there'll be some support for Alisael, but it's going to take a pretty big move forward from anybody else in there to take her down. I actually was a little, I mean, it's only a field of 5, so obviously they're going. I actually was almost wondering if the Generazios would run Pure Sensation in the Jiper with Disco Partner and sort of try and use him to maybe force World of Trouble into, if it's possible to force World of Trouble into a pace that's a little bit too quick, kind of as they did last year. But he's going to be, instead, will be an overwhelming favorite in a $100,000 stake race, which there's nothing wrong with that. So it looks again, as you go through this sequence, as if you're going to be dealing with a couple of pretty short prices in both Pure Sensation and Regal Glory. And, of course, you have a threat of Blue, who's going to be a pretty well well backed himself, so this thing could become pretty chalky. The All Stakes Pick Four starts with the Susquehanna, and Dynatale returns to the site of her Penn Oaks win a couple of years ago. Now a 5-year-old, she comes out of the Gallarette, which I'm willing to bet at this point that the Gallarette is going to be a race that we look back on in a few months and say, wow, that was better than we realized. I'm going to take it at face value at this point, which is that Mitchell Road ran very, very well. I wish that it had been a couple of weeks earlier so that we could see Mitchell Road come back in the Just a Game and run against Rushing Fall and some of the heavies from Chad Brown's division, because she ran very, very well in there. And Dynatale chased that strong pace, weakened a little bit late, but, I mean, those horses are a lot better than what she's facing in here, and it does feel as if from the inside she should be able to dictate the pace for the most part. So I'm expecting her to run very, very well. Enchanted Ghost tried to rally into a slow pace in the Dahlia last time. That was a good race. The top three finishers are all great at stake caliber. Laminada is stake placed. Viva Vegas is great at stake placed. And Secret Message came back and won the Nassau at Woodbine last week. So I would think that Enchanted Ghost has a shot to get a piece of it and could end up upsetting the Dynatale. Other stake-wise, the 6-furlong race, the Chocolate Town Sprint, is a race, I think, where Killy Bake's Captain, it looks from a class perspective like he kind of stands out. But you also have the Maryland wonder horses like Lockie that we'll see if he can duplicate that huge effort from last time at Laurel. These races, for the most part, I want to support any smaller track that's running a number of big races on a card like this. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I just don't know how many opportunities there are going to be to bet. I think if you can find a favorite or two that you want to take a stand against, it's worth making some of these horizontal plays.
Well, and I agree, and I happen to be a huge Killy Bake's Captain fan. I was very disappointed with that, the way things turned out in the run. Happy with him because I thought he was the right price to play with. But there's some horses here. You mentioned Lockie, and it's funny because I reached out to Damon Delodovico after that performance in the Whiteley and communicated that 108 buyer to him the next morning, and he said, "Wow!" He said, "He said he knew he had run a big race and a big fig performance, but he that was I mean even stunning to Damon. He doesn't have to run even that well to be a part of this. And then there's I brought this up yesterday with Todd Mostoller, the Uptown Charlie Brown children that are been remarkable, for Eddie Coletti and the Uptown Charlie Brown campaigners. Both of them are okay, the brothers. And Midnight Charlie, I suppose, a little bit more versatile in terms of running into a pace. But, he's run a handful of races in a row that are competitive in here. And Home Run Maker's okay for Maya Engelhart. So I thought there was a lot going on in here.
Yeah, I think this is one of the races of the undercard, so to speak, that looks the most wide open. You'll see Lackey goes with, I guess, horses like, I always get his name wrong. Is it the one that Jennifer Patterson trained that won the General George? I keep saying uncontested. It's uncaptured. It's one of those uns. My point being, horses run big a lot of times at Laurel and don't duplicate it elsewhere, especially Maryland-based horses. But this Lackey has run a number of good racers, or Lockie, all over. So I would expect that he'll run well, and he'll be pretty much the biggest thorn in the side of Killy Bake's Captain. So it's one of the ones that I'm looking forward most to watching. And then if you feel like you have an opportunity for a little bit of a price leading into Regal Glory and then a Thread of Blue or Fluminense, who might be the price that you want to fool around with in the multi-race plays, then it's certainly a good opportunity for that, because there'll be a good amount of money in the pick four pool and some real opportunity.
Well, and we should mention the group of races, the 8, 9, 10, 11, which is the late pick four, the all-turf pick four and all stakes pick four. Those races then are connected to the Pennine Ridge for the cross country. So if you're playing this pick four, you might as well have the Pennine Ridge at your disposal and play that pick five as well.
Yeah, put some money into that cross-country pick five. I mean, I know Naira's doing it every week. They're trying hard. There's only 82 grand in that pool last week, and players like low takeout pick five races, wagers. I mean, I don't want to bang the drum too hard, but when we talk a lot about takeout, here's an opportunity that a racetrack's taking to put a wager together that has a low takeout that usually features some good races, and it's no exception tomorrow. And, I mean, heck, we all know, all of us that play any kind of multi-race bet know that we love taking the opportunity where we think there might be a single or a race or two where you can get pretty thin, and there certainly are in this sequence tomorrow. So go for it.
Do you got a Pennine Ridge opinion?
I think the Pennine Ridge is an absolutely fascinating race. I think there's a good mixture of horses in it, and I think we're saddled with this really intriguing question of just how good is value proposition. You know, I mean, he was basically sensational in breaking his maiden on debut. He, you know, didn't have a tough trip by any means, but was lingering sort of towards the back of the pace, made a huge move to reach contention, was confronted at the top of the stretch, and then just kicked clear, and is now another of a group of horses that were purchased overseas by Chad Brown that look like they have a tremendous amount of quality, joining a newspaper of record, Digital Age, and I believe DeMarchelier were the four horses that he purchased at Tattersall's last year. So we've seen them all run extremely well. And, you know, you have him in a scenario where there are some real proven stakes competitors like Social Paranoia, like Clint Maroon, who we talked about before, who won the Woodhaven last time, albeit with kind of a ridiculously easy trip on the lead. And, you know, you think from a speed figure perspective, which obviously speed figures are not the be-all, end-all on turf, that it looks like value proposition may end up going off the favorite. He's the morning line favorite, and I think David Aragon is certainly taking into consideration the Chad Brown horses receive a tremendous amount of support. But, you know, how good might this horse be? I'm really fascinated to see it. I think that the mile and an eighth, especially with the rail out on this inner turf course, you always want to be careful about the pace. I think the pace is pretty much probably going to come from one of the two Todd Pletcher trainees and or Magnificent McCool. So we'll see one of those Pletcher horses plus Magnificent McCool get out there. I know Value Proposition was pretty far off the pace in his debut. I get the feeling that he can probably be a little bit more forwardly placed if necessary, and I would imagine that Jose Lascano is going to try to get him into a comfortable stalking spot, save as much ground as possible as well. You know, looking through, and you can watch a lot of these workouts on XBTV, looking through some of the horses that Chad Brown has worked Value Proposition with, it's pretty clear at this point that he feels like he has some quality. He's been working with, most recently he worked with DeMarchelier, but he worked with the Manhattan-bound Olympico, who won the Fort Marcy, also with Almanar, and earlier this winter with Digital Age. And he was holding his own every time. So he's a very, very talented horse, and I think we might end up seeing something really special. It looks like there could be, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Chad Brown ends up with the two favorites in the Belmont Derby, at least among domestic horses. Now, if you like A Thread of Blue, I think you do have to give Social Paranoia a certain amount of respect. I thought he ran very well in the American turf. He also made his move inside, which really nothing good happened towards the inside of that turf course, which is something we discussed in terms of what happens when there's some rain on the Churchill turf. So you probably want to give him another chance. And if you believe he's a win candidate, he'll be among your A's. I would make a Clint Maroon and Seismic Wave backups, as well as DeMarchelier, and I would pretty much focus on Value Proposition and Social Paranoia in that pick five. And it's probably a sequence where you're going to want to play your all A ticket for, and I'll write up some A's, B's, and C's this week. You're going to want to play that A ticket, I think, for $3 or $4, because it just does not look like a sequence where you have to be very wide on many occasions, and you might be able to hit the thing a few times.
Well, and I'm just going to put one word in for a horse that hasn't come up, and that's Henley's Joy. And I want everybody to do an exercise with a dark pen, and that is put a line through the American Turf, put a line through the Risen Star where he tried dirt, and put a line through the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Although, you know, the concern here is that was yielding, and even with them not running on turf today, there's no guarantee that turf tomorrow is going to be firm. If Henley's Joy does not care for cutting the ground, that may be an issue. But if you cross out the dirt race, cross out the juvenile turf try, you know, which was, you know, heavy heads. And then even the American Turf, where he had some issues early and was put, you know, much further back than he likes. Take a look at what you got at that point, because he's never been worse than second. And I like Johnny getting on him too, because Johnny will have him, you know, well positioned behind those speeds. And I think he's going to get ignored in the betting. And I think if you're looking for a price option in here, it's Henley's Joy.
I think that's fair, and I think it's kind of funny, and this, of course, with all due respect to Mike Smith, who I think is one of the best riders of all time. We've seen him become a little, I guess you could say, liberal with ground loss situations. He can certainly show a little bit of a disregard for where his horses are relative to the rail. I watched this trip a couple times to try and get everything along with it. Part of the comment line says bothered start. That's insane. He wasn't bothered at all. He actually broke perfectly fine. But there's no doubt he went extremely wide. And he also moved a little. It was a weird race in that the field kind of, a thread of blue established a pretty solid pace. He got out there and did his thing. And then one of the things that Luis Saez is very, very good at, and sort of ironically, we ended up seeing this a couple of hours later when he was on maximum security, is he can really throw out the anchor in the middle of a race when he's on speed. And he did that. And the field kind of compressed when he did that. And that on the turf usually makes it so difficult to run those kind of horses down. And only Digital Age, who is not only a horse really of a pretty significant talent, but is also trained by Chad Brown, who trains his horses to basically gallop and finish, which is what Digital Age did. But, I mean, if you look at the middle of this race, Digital Age and Henley's Joy are together about mid-pack, and Digital Age is actually under a hell of a ride at this point. Henley's Joy is sort of advancing into the race about the half-mile pole. I was intrigued by him as well. I don't think he's quite good enough to win if these other horses show up, and if Value Proposition duplicates the maiden race at all, but he's definitely run a number of races that make him a little too obvious to exclude altogether in the exacta, in the try, and as a backup on some of the multi-race plays, because he's really not a horse that you want to lose to, given all that went on that day. So yeah, it's a fascinating race, and I think if you sort of merge the fields of the Penn Mile and the Pennine Ridge together, and then sprinkle in some horses from other three-year-old turf races that we'll see both in the last few weeks and upcoming, the Belmont Derby, this trio of turf races, I will not refer to it as the Turf Trinity. These trio of turf races they have coming up in New York should be very, very interesting.
Well, and the assumption is, considering the recruiting that's gone on, Martin Panza has been trying to draw in some European interest as well. So,
Nate O'Brien always has supported it. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I see the term Turf Trinity, and I think about being in religion classes when I was in high school and thinking about the track. So it's kind of funny, but I did read the racing form and theology class in college one time too.
I thought,
without being overly blasphemous, I thought that God would want me to hit the daily double.
Without a doubt. And for those of you that are interested in that double, there is a good state bred filly and mare turf sprint allowance that goes as the ninth. And I'm using the 1-5. What did I say? 1-5-8-9, I think. 1-5-8-9? 1-5-8-9 are the four that I would want to use in that nightcap. Nick, we're going to see you by when next week?
I'm arriving Thursday, so I will I'll come for my in-person visit Friday morning.
And it's always a fun mix and match, depending on who turns up on that.
I can guarantee Philly Joe, Pat Cummings, and Marshall Graham. So you can have, of that trio, I'm sure the only one you're really interested in is Marshall. Of course, everybody loves Joe. So, you know, we'll work in everybody that needs to be there.
Well, let me think about that. Wait a minute. Who's missing from the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse? The usual, you know, the fearsome foursome that puts the scare
Jack.
Into
Jack Jenkins.
Well, Jack. No, isn't there another big body that's usually part of that
Jack's not exactly a featherweight. I mean, he's not.
That's true.
He be,
that's true.
It's no, he can show up with plenty of presence. Yeah, Marshall definitely is the outcast in that bunch, but we'll scare up somebody that'll make sure we're solid.
I'm trying to think.
Solid foursome. Don't worry about it.
I'll go through the series of there's a series of great pictures that I guess it's really really the three of you and. Yeah, all right. I don't know who I'm thinking of that over the years that might be.
It's been an eclectic bunch. We actually do one of the traditional things that we do is we go to Peter Luger the night before the Belmont every year, and this is going to be the sixth annual. And the only ones that have been to every single one are Joe and I. We've had a couple of few different people along the way, and it's just the one thing that we sort of always are locked in on. Now we have Pat back, so King Umberto is really, King Umberto's stock is soaring. Pat Cummings wants eight of King Umberto's every night Belmont week, including Belmont night. So it's a good time for them between Privman and Pat. You've got all ends covered, pizza and the main dining room.
We will certainly see him, and I don't know. Did Pat try my Brijol, the Bix Brijol? Was he around last year? Last year was his first return,
right? No,
he
hasn't been to a Belmont since American Pharoah. Yeah, he's not.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he was back. I think he moved back in July.
So
yeah, it's
close.
Be his first Belmont back.
Excellent.
It's worth a try. But Brijol is a very underrated item.
It's the greatest, and pork too.
Always. I prefer it actually.
Yeah, I'm just so delighted to, and not just on the pork and beef side, the Brijol, but also the involtini with the chicken or veal. Goes the other, you can go in that direction. I had involtini with the Trombettas. We in Baltimore 2 weeks ago. We went to their place. DeMoma,
very nice,
which was excellent. I saw the Trombetta homestead where Michael's grandfather, right in Little Italy, they lived, and only just recently did the family sell the Mike's uncle passed, and his dad Rudy finally, almost 100 years their family in Little Italy in Baltimore. Very cool.
That's great.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam, 1215. Sit down at the keyboard and put this thing together so I can put it on the website.
Yes, 100%.
All right.
I've been remiss.
You're very remiss. You're completely remiss, in fact.
I'm on a lot of things. All bad.
Are you remissful, though? That's the question.
on occasion. better, more so than remorseful.
I will see you live at Belmont a week from right now.
Can't wait.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. We'll take a break, probably our last of the morning. Marty McGee standing by, and we'll catch up with Mart, get a visit in with him, and then Hammer joins us in a little bit to close out the morning. I also, as we go to the break, I might, if we have time at the end of the show, I might even reach out to Sid. If you have not yet seen my tweet or the TDN today, Sid has written a piece that is a major wake-up call. I called it a take him to the woodshed reality check. It's called Taking Stock, which is the column that Sid writes. Beneath Lasix, EIPH is real. It's a reminder in this insane environment that that horses suffer from exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhage. It's not some made-up concept. And Sid talks about the history, and it is an absolute, as only Sid can do it, it's an absolute tour de force and needs to be consumed by everybody. We will step aside and come right back with Marty McGee right after this.